At the end of June, Governor Andrew Cuomo signed 33 bills into law, and one of them extended a statute authorizing the State Department of Environmental Conservation to run a sweepstakes to increase subscribers to a magazine called Conservationist. This piqued my interest, and after going down a very short rabbit hole, aka emailing a DEC spokesperson, I learned that this summer marks the 75th anniversary of the Outdoor magazine, which is published six times a year. So we're going to spend some time discussing the magazine and the sweepstakes, and to do that, we're joined by Sean Mahar, Chief of Staff at the DEC. Thanks for joining us, Sean.
Thanks for having me, Dave.
So it's my understanding that before you joined the DEC, when you were just a wee little lad, you were introduced to this magazine. Is that true? And what was your relationship with the conservationists growing up?
I was. And actually, it was a staple in our household, one that my dad always, you know, was a subscriber to growing up. You know, when he would get us our fishing licenses, he would make sure he had the conservationists on our coffee table at all times. And that really gave me my foray into the world of DEC. And as a young professional in high school, wondering where I was going, this was actually like, holy crap, like this agency really does cool stuff. And it's like what I want to do when I grow up. So it really inspired me to be the conservationist that I am today.
So I think the obvious follow-up question is, sounds like you were pretty cool in high school.
I tried to be, yeah.
Yeah. And so what were you kind of doing with the magazine growing up? Was this something where you were looking for new ideas and outdoor tips, or was it just a way to further experience the outdoors, I guess?
It was a mix of everything. One, it was a great opportunity to see what the actual conservation work that was going on the ground around the state, like, and the people that were doing that work. And that's what's really awesome about the magazine. It really, you know, throughout the last 75 years has really shown a light on what New York is doing to protect the environment and who the people are that are doing that work. And it really inspired me to want to, again, be a good conservationist in my own backyard and my personal life choices, but in my career choices, and want to see how I could be a better environmental steward. And the articles and content in The Conservationist really showed what the opportunities were for young professionals out there. And it was an exciting way of seeing what I can do personally to make the world a better place.
Does the magazine seem demonstrably different from when you were reading it as a teen?
It's definitely changed over time, but a lot of the content remains the same. I would say, I think for most of the readers too, looking at the briefly section of our law enforcement and forest ranger work was really what attracted me. I always wanted to know like what the cops on the beat were finding and who they were catching doing bad things. And it was always interesting to read a lot of those stories. And that was sort of my first look into it. And that's why at first I wanted to be an environmental conservation officer, because they seemed to do really cool things. But The Conservationist, again, opened my eyes up to more of what the DEC had. And Dave, I also have an historic copy. This is from 1984. 2 days before I started at DEC, I was cleaning out my friend's grandmother's house, or helping her do it, and this was just in a pile of magazines somewhere. And I said, no way, like, this is cool. I'm starting at DEC. I found this old historic magazine. So I've kept it in my office, and I just wanted to bring it to show you, because you can see how the photo quality has changed over time. But really, a lot of the emphasis is on the art and the art and nature. And if you think back to like the Hudson River School of Painters and things like that, the magazine was really to celebrate New York's outdoors and the artistic components of it, and really trying to instill that stewardship ethic in New Yorkers for protecting the environment. And they do that through art and trying to get them instilled in it. So it was really cool just to be able to look back at this history and also see some of the similar names that are still in the DEC today. Our current editor, Eileen Stegman, has actually just left DEC. She just retired recently, and she's been the editor for a number of years. But she actually had a story in this edition too, and I showed it to her once and said, look, Eileen, I've been following you for decades now.
So does the DEC then have basically a magazine staff, or do you contract out for all this stuff?
No, we have a magazine staff. We've got in-house designers and writers. We do a lot of content from outside writers from other environmental organizations or conservation groups or academic researchers. We try and really, again, use it as a vehicle to really show all New Yorkers all the different actions that are underway across the state to protect the environment. You know, and that's DEC work, but that's also state parks and our sister agencies who are doing the work as well. It's really just trying to show how New York is really leading the nation on environmental stewardship work.
So in the memorandum for the legislation that I mentioned at the top of the show, it says there's 80,000 paid subscribers and an equal number of secondary readers in schools, libraries, and homes throughout the state. Is that subscription number right? And how do secondary readers access the magazine?
That is right. It does fluctuate over time, as all magazine subscriptions do. And the sweepstakes is actually one of the tools that we use to try and attract and retain new readers of The Conservationist. Generally, what we've seen in the trends are it's pretty holding steady at about that 80,000 mm-hmm. number, and we're always trying to grow it and find new ways of growing it as well.
Well, I guess then turning to the sweepstakes, the bill memorandum also says that each year at the state fair, there's a prize like a canoe or a lifetime fishing license that's offered to generate interest in the magazine as a means of boosting subscription numbers. How many subscribers does this type of investment usually generate? And more importantly, what's the prize for this year's fair?
Well, I can't break any of the surprises,
no scoop here.
But I would say please go to the New York State Fair and check it out this year. We've got a lot of cool things that are in store, and we encourage all New Yorkers to go check it out.
And in terms of the interest you're able to generate from this, I mean, are we talking about 5,000 new subscribers? I think that's what the memo says. Does it fluctuate, or how does it
fluctuates depending on the attendance at the fair and the foot traffic that we get. But 5,000 is typically a number that we shoot for of new subscribers coming in from a sweepstakes like this. And what we do is we have people go to the fair, fill out a form, be entered into a contest. We give them a complimentary copy of The Conservationist, and then we follow up and encourage them to become full subscribers.
So if listeners are just blown away and intrigued right now, how can they subscribe to The Conservationist, and how much will it cost them a year
sure.
to do so?
Well, first off, first place to go, dec.ny.gov. Right on our homepage mm-hmm. is a subscription button where you can go and subscribe to The Conservationist. We have three different subscription levels. The first one, for a year subscription, it's $18. If you want to do a two-year subscription, it's $24. And if you want to do a three-year subscription, it's $30.
And I noticed, though, you can just get a PDF of the magazine online. Is that designed to help make it accessible, say, to people who can't afford the magazine?
Sure. It's really also to actually provide more content and greater
okay.
content to the subscribers. So we have the print edition, but the online edition actually allows for more content, more photos, and a greater opportunity to go more in depth in some of the content that we have on the conservation work that we're doing. So it's a really cool improvement that we've done and trying to meet people where they are in today's digital age and give them other options and ways of encountering The Conservationist. Really what we find is that, I'll be honest with you, tell a little story. I was at my doctor's office recently, and on the coffee table of coffee table magazines in my doctor's office was A Conservationist. So, and I actually saw someone else pick it up and thumb through it while they were sitting there. So those are some of the secondary readers that we get. I go many places, and I'm always surprised where I see A Conservationist, you know, from inside a school to a doctor's office to libraries. You know, we try and really send it out everywhere. And it has sort of a cult following to it, I would say. You know, a lot of people over time have really come to appreciate, love, and actually save these magazines. And that's why when I found this one from 1984, it was clear someone was saving it for some reason. But it's really an awesome tool that the state has created over time. You know, we're happy to be celebrating the 75th year, and we can't wait to see where it goes in the future.
In terms of that cult following, any idea how that manifests itself? Are there gatherings around the state where people get together to look at the artwork? Is there something more nefarious than that? I mean, what are we talking about?
Well,
here?
Truth be told, Dave, we have a DEC library in our building as well where we keep copies of this. And
okay.
there is some foot traffic that comes in from people who want to look at it. Our Five Rivers Environmental Education Center in Albany also has some on display where people can see. We haven't hosted a party, but it is the 75th anniversary. So if we go there, we'll make sure you get your invitation and happy to come celebrate with us.
And in terms of the revenue you bring in from the subscriptions, does that cover the entire production costs, or like every other editorial venture, do you have to find revenue from other streams as well?
Well, again, I mean, a lot of the content that we produce is covered by the subscriptions that we get. We have to obviously pay attention, like any magazine would, to the fluctuation of subscription rates. A lot of the content, like The Conservationist for Kids, will be underwritten by some of our programs. So like the most recent edition that we gave you was underwritten by our Division of Air Resources through a grant from the Environmental Protection Agency. So we're using other resources to help advance the core mission of DEC and the priority programs that we're doing. And again, it's an important education tool to really, again, show people the actions that we have underway, a means to better explain it to them and really provide, you know, longer stories to really step down all the different actions that we have underway and use that as a way of, again, breeding the next generation of conservationists in the state and getting people excited about that work.
Moving forward, say the next 75 years, Do you envision the magazine evolving in any way, shape, or form, or is it pretty much just staying true to that core mission and just adapting around the margins?
Well, we're always looking for opportunities to adapt it. I mean, with talented people like Erica Ringwald here, who's really leading the charge at that, we're always looking to figure out what are the new and better ways of attracting and retaining readership to this magazine. I think the foundation of, you know, art and using art as a lens to view conservation is always going to be there, because when we look at the, you know, demographic research, that's what people are most interested in. You know, it's a really like the hunters and anglers of the state really want a resource where they can learn, you know, where the coolest places are to go hunting or fishing, or what's the newest technology on the market that's out there, or, you know, learn more about the species that they're interested in catching. And, you know, it's a really cool scientific lens, and I don't think we're going to lose that. However, we're going to continue to adapt it and provide new tools like the digital edition and other creative stories to really, again, tell that story of the great work that we have going on in the state.
Have you ever gotten to contribute to the magazine?
I have.
What was your contribution?
Back in my former career, when I worked for the Audubon Society, I actually helped co-author a story on birds mean business in the state, and talking about ecotourism and sort of the boom of bird watching in the state, as that was a niche audience that they were looking to, again, attract new readership from, and show that this conservationist provides good content for nature lovers, you know, both those that hunt and fish, but those that like to go a hike and bird watch.
What did it feel like to come full circle and see your own work in this magazine that you had read as a very cool high schooler?
It was great, and I would say that my dad still, every other month when this comes out, will flag a story for me and say, did you read this one, Sean, or what about this one, Sean, and he wants to know the backstory of it. So I know he's always watching, and that's always in the back of my mind whenever I'm watching the conservationist content come my way. I'm like, I wonder what my dad's going to say about this. Every once in a while, I tip him off to him excited.
Well, then, is this something that you're passing along to the next generation of Mahars?
I am. We have our conservationist at home that our daughter reads and flips through. I don't know if she's really reading most of the stories now. She definitely looks at the pictures. She does like the conservationist for kids. It's cool content. We've got some cool kid word searches and whatnot that she'll do every once in a while. But I am trying to be a good dad and instill a good stewardship ethic in her, get her excited about the environment and the outdoors, and use tools like the conservationist as a way to do that.
Well, we've been speaking with Sean Mahar. He's the chief of staff at the State Department of Environmental Conservation and my second favorite Mahar to have on the Capitol Press Room. Sean, thank you so much for making the time.
Thanks,
I really appreciate it.
Appreciate it.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals in education, human services, and healthcare.